It's a constant thing where it's not always there, but it's like it'll come up occasionally in conversation with others, especially where people ask, like, how do you have this together? And it's like, I absolutely don't. And I'm afraid one day someone's gonna call me out on my bullshit.
Welcome to the Artist Development Podcast, where we explore the human experience within the music business. In episode 3, we chat with indie artist Nisa. We explore the feeling of guilt in relationships, Gen Z's quest to understand each other, and tackling imposter syndrome. Nisa is an incredible talent, and we always have killer conversations, so I'm stoked to share this one with y'all. Enjoy.
I grew up here, so I've spent a lot of time here. I was also here for college, so I kind of have seen it change in the last 22 years that I've lived here on and off in many ways, but I've honestly never expected it to look the way it did in 2020 and feel the way it did. I think part of it was no one was really ready, and then everyone kind of just panicked and left, at least people who hadn't, you know, lived here and planned to live here after. And so in many ways, it was this like awakening of sorts, a realization that like a lot of what New York City is upheld by is like the ability to connect with others and like the rare ways in which it provides that for us through like art and culture and food and all the different things that people move here for. And so when that was kind of like put to a stop, the city also in many ways like was hit with this jolt of like deadness. So when I was here from like March when it started through the summer and then through a lot of the winter, and it changed a lot, but it also almost like brought itself back as quickly as it had shut down. So I guess I was there for the lull period of the summer. And I spent a lot of that time by myself writing and kind of like taking in the environment and the changes and having that reflect in my music in ways I didn't realize until after.
We're definitely going to touch base on your EP because that is something of great interest for me. But you said something that really struck me, which is that New York has this embracing human connection. And yet from the outside, it has a stigma that it's a tough city and people are so mean. Yet I've met so many nice people. I've had such great experiences in New York. I've never really come across the best way to say it is like the meaner side of it. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I actually think it's really funny because I've never really met a like mean born and raised New Yorker through and through. And then the people who move here, same experience. I think we have this like 70s Scorsese like impact idea of like grit that, I mean, it exists to some extent, but it's not like an integral part of being a New Yorker. I actually think it's the opposite. I think people mind their business, but everyone's willing to help out. And it's always kind of been like that. Like we're I guess, well, like a funny story is I was in Colorado a few months ago and everyone driving by would like stop and roll down their car window to say hi or like walk by and say hello. And I thought it was weird in the sense that like it was so alien to me because no one here will just say hi to you if they don't know you, but they will offer help. And there is a sense of community in that like respect for each other. I think that's my take on how mean we are.
We met in late October, I think, and you were planning out your EP release, and you ended up getting your EP shipped out the door around, I think it was March of this year. How did that entire process go? Talk me through it, recording, planning, and releasing something halfway through quarantine into coming out of quarantine.
Sure. So I guess Guilt Trip really started like right before the pandemic as an idea in my head, a collection of like stories and kind of feelings that I had been harboring since I had lived abroad in London the year before. And like that time of transition from me coming back, and it resulted in like all of these ideas that I had been planning to like collect into some sort of project, which I initially thought was going to be like a song, if anything. But once the like lockdown began, I found myself in my like childhood bedroom for like a few months at a time with all of these like notes and diaries and feelings that I wanted to record somewhat. So I demoed the project out, and I had been kind of Zooming with a good friend of mine and the guitar player in my band, Fritz Ortman. We'd been Zooming regularly, and I had been sharing these demos, and he had been sending back like drum tracks, and we were figuring it out until I met Ronnie DeSimone, who is the producer for the project and a producer on many of my projects now, in June. And I brought him the demos, and we decided we were going to try to record in the middle of the pandemic as it was possible with safety measures in place at Studio G in Brooklyn and at his home studio, which made it a lot easier for us to kind of continue working. And so throughout the summer of 2020, the seven songs for the project kind of all came to life over the course of like the June and July period. And we finished it really in early September. And I immediately decided I wanted to release it as the debut EP for my project Nisa, which is what I'm now kind of working on and continuing to write for.
You had to work around some different, I guess, restrictions that a traditional recording session does not entail. One of which is, in something that I picked up on, is that you were back in your childhood bedroom reviewing notes and journals and things. What is it like being back home or in a childhood bedroom and also reviewing all of your notes?
Definitely can now speak on how the like mixture of like displacement and nostalgia and like confusion and resentment, all of those things that were both very adult and like childish, I think the line is very thin, were kind of like feeding into each other. And then being home in New York, a place that no longer feels exactly like home, I think, because I've just been transversing like New York, London, and LA a lot and have not really decided where I feel most comfortable. But now that I'm living in Brooklyn, it's kind of like I've learned to find a new place in like remaking that home. But being home, like in the place where I grew up, it was kind of, I think it kind of contributed to my ability to hone in on this like very like youthful energy with the EP, where songs like Bottom Feeder and Common Denominator were really pointed and like almost spoken with a childlike confidence. Whereas I think I'm pretty reserved as a person now, but for the project itself, I think it helped kind of give us that like anger in recording and that like burst of energy, which otherwise may not have been there.
And this entire EP is inspired by a breakup, and you were going through a lot of different emotions. And in interviews that I was reading and little snippets of the recordings and the releases, you really go into detail of all of these mixed emotions. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think one of the most prominent was guilt, obviously, from the title. But I think guilt is a complicated emotion because it plays on your sense to prioritize your own feelings. At times it's about like how much you care about another person and how you were left feeling worse about wanting to kind of let them also feel things and understand their feelings. And so the like, I guess, tertiary emotions that Guilt Trip really focuses on, other than guilt, is like resentment and this like inability to communicate. And I think communication was so important in these songs and in this project for me, because in a way I was communicating through the music what I couldn't say. And so it helped me kind of almost gain perspective on what I really felt. And I think it was a desire to grow and to change in a way that maybe being in a relationship that wasn't right kind of had grounded me in. It was like unsettling. And so the songs almost like push forward. I think Jockey, the one being the most like forward thinking, almost like decided for me that I was like beyond the point of where I was having thought about these songs, being in that relationship. So yeah, it was very cathartic.
You obviously decide to break up. How do you, and not, we're going to kind of do a little personal dive without jumping too far in, but how do you decide when enough is enough? How, like, at what point, what signals did you realize like you weren't growing to where you wanted to be, and you found yourself unhappy in a relationship. Like, walk me through that.
Yeah, I think at least with this relationship and like this experience for me, it was more of like, one, you realize you're in a different place as someone who you could still, you know, really want to be with, but feel like no matter what you do, you can't break through to someone who is looking for another, like looking forward in another way. And so with me, it was like an inability to communicate and connect could be just you speaking two different languages because you're absolutely no longer on the same page about the most core important things in a relationship. And I think here it was like, what do you want out of this at this point? And so for me, it was frustration and guilt about having made a decision I wasn't sure about at the time. And breaking up is always a hard thing to do, but it's also, I think, a confusing thing because it's a reckoning of like who you thought you were with someone else versus like, all right, who do I want to be on my own? And so that was where I made my choice, I think. And I made the choice right before writing the music, which is why it was kind of like still a transition period for me. And in that transition, I was still feeling all of these things that I think reflected in the lyrics as like, you know, being on the line still.
In another interview, you said that you spend a lot of time overthinking situations. Did you find yourself doing that post-breakup or pre-writing? At what point did that play into what you were doing?
More so post-breakup than in the writing, actually. I think, interestingly, the writing came easily, more so than usual with this project. And I think part of that was like, I wanted to capture the rawness of it by kind of like putting pen to paper right away. And then in reviewing my notes, it was more about like kind of trying to figure out how to best translate how I was feeling in the moment. And it was easier because it had happened so soon. And I had kind of taken that moment as like an opportunity of sorts. And it helped me both trying to get through things and in like reflecting as an artist.
You've described yourself as an anxious person and hyperactive. How does that affect your creative process?
I joke with my friends about like not being able to slow down or sit still all the time, especially in music. And I don't really stop writing. It's more of something that I think I'll always do. It just doesn't mean that I'll record and release everything I write. My hyperactivity, I think, makes it difficult for me to like sit still in a present moment sometimes. I'm always kind of moving forward and looking ahead. And so what it does is it keeps me from being grounded at times. I think that in music can be both a good thing and a bad thing. Being anxious for me is a new experience, or at least I've only become aware of it pretty recently. I think a lot of people in quarantine have had a time to sit down and like, I don't know, take stock of how we're feeling. And both things together, I think just, I have a lot of caffeine, which kind of I think will reflect how I am constantly feeling. But yeah, it's a lot of like anxiety that is high functioning in the sense that like it won't stop me from doing what I'm doing, but it will very much impact the way that I go about doing things, especially in music.
You also said though that you have notes and you've journaled. How do you make time or allow your brain to relax?
I read a lot of poetry, and I also walk a lot now, which is a new thing from the quarantine. I think before I had like tried to make space for like physical activity in my life, and that's become harder with my schedule. But walking around, especially in this weather, has made it a lot easier for me to kind of like take a pause, if not physically, then like at least kind of mentally, and make space. And I think kind of like moments of solitude are helpful, and I would like to take up more mindfulness, but as of now, it's just more that like breathing room of walking and hanging out with friends at times, and like occasionally cooking has helped as well.
There's something really therapeutic about walking, though. It's something that I found actually in a journal entry for myself a couple of days ago, which is interesting that you brought it up, is that I need to make more time for walks. I used to go for walks much more frequently because, like you said, it helps clear your mind. You're doing something, but you're also giving yourself space to breathe.
Yeah, I encourage you go for more walks. I try to tell my friends to like go for walks. And when we're in the studio, sometimes I'll try to like take a walk break, just because I think it does more than we can really like give it credit for doing. As you're saying, it's like you're doing nothing and you're doing a lot for yourself at the same time. And you're also kind of like forcing yourself to be this like doing this like routine thing, which like for some people it can be running, I think, or it could be any kind of physical activity. But with walking, you're at this like slow pace that will effectively also help you slow down and be grounded, I think. And it's fun. It's fun to walk, and especially in a city. I imagine Nashville has beautiful nature to like go outside and get in, kind of like immersed in, which I've been missing recently.
Everything is green here. Yeah. There's so much rainfall that I knew coming out here that there was going to be actual weather in California. It's we're constantly in a drought, and coming out here, it's just such a shift of, we have beautiful trees in California. Don't get me wrong. The redwoods are amazing. I grew up in Southern California, so palm trees have a special place in my heart, but there's so many trees all over the place here in Middle Tennessee. And so it is peaceful to go for a walk. The difference, I think, for me, walking versus running, is that running, I need music, whereas walking, I can go silent, or I can have some sort of just like white noise going on where I don't need motivational music at a fast tempo to keep going.
I feel that.
You have given a little bit of insight as far as like your thinking process and how you dissect things. How do you approach your goals?
With reckless abandon. I kind of set myself up with these like intentions rather than goals. I think goals ultimately always, but like I try to take it piece by piece to kind of ground myself more in the present and like focus on things one by one. I see it as like, and I don't know, like some people will say that you're climbing a ladder and some people will say that you're like going up a hill. I've just kind of seen it as like, there's a horizon and everything along the way is important and you want to remember everything. So I set myself up with like, kind of like the more important things in life, which are obviously like social life and friends and maintaining friendships. And that's been super important recently. And also just like, as a musician, I think it's important to do that first in many ways, because you never know when you'll have to leave home, and like kind of appreciate those things first while also setting myself up with short-term goals like rehearsing regularly and writing regularly, and kind of trying to build a platform for myself that is very necessary for DIY, while also thinking constantly about long-term things that I'd love to do, which in recent months has been like touring and putting out this other EP that I've finished. And really just trying to manage the like immediate and the future has been the way that I've been seeing goal making and goal orienting. And I think I've also come to realize that organization is key. And so in reaching and thinking about goals, I have to write them down and like break them down to really understand what I mean when I say certain things.
Are you an organized person?
Yes. I just rely on like apps and things to help me get stay organized. The like physical organization of my life is important to me. Like obviously like keeping a small, clean and organized space, but then also like having various Google Docs and notebooks and things has been a lifesaver, because I'm a very visual learner, visual creator. And so seeing things and feeling things out is helpful for me, especially in like the creation of future goals and things like that.
And what are some of those apps that are lifesavers for you? What are like your, what's your app stack?
I got you. So obviously all of the Google Drive stuff, I'm a big fan of Docs, and sometimes I'll use spreadsheets, which I know, I thought I'd never be that person. And I use the Notes app pretty religiously. And also Evernote, if you've heard of that, is a really cool journal app that I will like occasionally use. This is the best tactile resource I have. And then I'm a big fan of Reminders for Apple, which I think is just helpful on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes it helps to just like schedule something, like, you know, when people say push that thought for later, like schedule that thought for later. If you put it in an app, you will be forced to think about it later. And that's my extent of how much I love using technology. Other than that, it's like wishwashy.
I used Evernote for a little bit of time, and then I jumped ship to an app called Bear, which I felt like Evernote had become so bloated since the first time that I used it. I've gone back and forth. It's a love-hate relationship with Evernote. But most recently, I started using what's called Roam, and it allows you to connect. And I think this was what was missing for Evernote, which was that I would write notes down. I would even go back and review them every once in a while, but there was no way to bridge the gap and link between the notes that was user-friendly. And so that's actually what Roam allows you to do, is write within a couple keystrokes, you're linking things together. And so that's how my mind works, is everything's interconnected and you can draw inspiration from something that is seemingly completely irrelevant into a situation that you're already working on. And so I think it's very interesting, as you talk about yourself, how well in tune you are, despite, and I mean this in the kindest of ways, but you're young, you know, you are not, you're not old like me, but you've only lived a certain period of your life so far. And yet you have put a really large focus on understanding yourself. And that's something that I walked away from with our first conversation, which was that you have well thought out answers. You are confident in how you feel. And also, circling back, you said communication was a breakdown in your relationship. And yet for you and I and a couple of our mutual friends that we've all like had conversations with, you were an exceptional communicator. So do you think that's something that just happens for a Gen Z person? Or is that something that you've really worked on to build into your life?
Well, first off, I appreciate that reflection and those words. I think in terms of Gen Z and communication, I definitely see that as something that we've begun to like prioritize as just as a generation of like people who want more than anything to understand each other, especially within our age group. And like opening up a network online, I think, for people to communicate in the many ways that we now do. And even with like Zoom and with like Reddit, I love reading like indie heads forums and things like that. We like love to talk and to like dissect things. And I, as a thinker, as a person, and as an artist, I'm very curious about like getting to the root of things, and especially of people and how they think. And I actually think it's funny that you mention like conversations and phone calls that we've had with mutual friends, because in some of those calls, I think I've over-explained myself or my thoughts. And when you describe the interconnectedness of things within your thought process, it really relates to how I think and experience and try to connect, because I see that. And I think in trying very hard to prioritize communicating my thoughts verbally and maybe expressing it, I think it helps with music and understanding what people relate to. It helps me as a writer, and I think also just as generally as a human, to be able to kind of use the words that I love so much in speaking. I think I just like speaking and thinking, but yeah, I definitely think it's generational as well.
What are some of your favorite social apps that you use to communicate on a deeper level?
Honestly, I think Twitter has some of the best discourse I've seen. I'm not new to Twitter, but I'm like I've lurked for a long time, and I'm starting to use it more now, and as like a tool for like, I don't know, joking around and also just getting thoughts out. But I've found some useful threads on Twitter. I think it's really changed the way that I see the ability for like short form conversations to lead to like more important discourse and stuff. I think Reddit is really cool as a resource, especially for DIY musicians. I've Googled some really dumb things there that I probably could have just texted someone about. I think there's so much out there, but especially like Twitter, Reddit, and honestly YouTube as like something to just learn from.
Reddit is a marketer's dream. I will typically search something as far as product or features or an idea that I have, and then just add Reddit to the end of it. And you get true user feedback immediately. And it is, sometimes it's fantastic and it's very wholesome. And then there are other times where you're just like, man, I am so glad that I am not moving forward with this after reading this thread.
Yeah.
Twitter is a phenomenal communication tool. I think I hopped on Twitter when I was first able to, and I was not a power user, but I was a huge fanboy. And then I fell off once Instagram came around. I've never really been big on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I've recently jumped back into Twitter within like the last 18 months or so, and just lurk and I listen. And it's such a phenomenal tool for, even if you don't have anything to say or anything that you feel like saying, you can still hop in and just listen to conversations, obviously read, but you can see other people's thoughts. And if you follow thought leaders, they break down a lot of the things that are going on in their head that, like you said, short form communication. I'm huge on that. I don't want to read a 2000 word blog post just to get a snippet of useful information. And that 2000 words could have been summed up in like less than 100.
Yeah, I think when you talk about thought leaders, it's really cool to also like just follow people you're inspired by or like kind of want to connect to. I've found it really cool to feel closer to like some musicians and maybe like people in music business whose insights I would appreciate like firsthand, but am so grateful to have online. It feels like the same. And honestly, if you ever have a question, it's not like it's an impossible thing to kind of contribute to a conversation. As you were saying, you can kind of like feel involved without actually involving yourself if you don't want to, which is why I'm constantly on there and find it to be the coolest social media right now. Shout out Instagram too, but I'm not as big of a fan of a lot of the newer features of Instagram as I have been of Twitter's development over the years.
Instagram feels as though it's getting a little bloated trying to do a lot of things for a lot of different people, whereas the thing that made everyone fall in love with it was that you could simply post a picture and your friends could like it and you could have a little bit of a conversation and that was it. Now there's algorithms to combat, and you have reels, and we're trying to do reels because TikTok is taking people viral, but Instagram rewards you for using reels because it's a new feature. It's a whole cycle.
It's a vicious cycle, and like there's a marketplace. The advertising confuses me. Like it's cool sometimes. I've tried it before. It's just like you're saying, it's bloated now. And I like miss Instagram. I miss like the old Instagram filters that everyone hates on now. Like, you know, it humbled us. Like we don't have any of that anymore now. It's become so curated. And like, I do appreciate a curated feed in a lot of ways. A lot of my friends who are into like creative direction, art direction, I think they maximize the output of this Instagram. But for me, I do miss the simplicity of it and like kind of just like this lack of, you know, you make more with the less you have in that sense for Instagram. But
when Twitter released the timeline to swap between chronological and algorithm fed, that was a game changer for me. And that I think was when I rediscovered that, that's when I was like, Okay, Twitter, you're doing real things for real people.
Yeah, and for Instagram, it's just kind of like, I feel like they don't really have it all together. And Facebook bought Instagram, but I haven't been convinced by that relationship. I don't even really use Facebook beyond like the occasional post for a show or something like that. So I don't know.
We can't solve the world's problems today.
We can only think about them. Yeah.
We overthink them.
Exactly.
So looking back and overthinking things, how have you changed from 2019 to 2021?
I've definitely gained a sense of like, okay, I can do this on my own as long as I remember why I'm doing it and like think about how I'm doing it. It's been a lot of like guesswork along the way, which I think has been helpful as well. I was just having this conversation with a friend yesterday, photographer, who we were kind of talking about like having not gone to music school or film school and how it's impacted our ability to do things and kind of force us to like learn our own methods. And I'm reminded of like Kim Gordon and her like guitar playing and how I have a similar approach to like writing music. And so I've kind of just like had to fight this imposter syndrome and turn it into like, maybe I'm kind of inventing something with my process, or at least making my mark in a way that's indelible to me only. I've changed because I've kind of grown to understand that no one really knows what they're doing all the time. So I don't need to always think about and compare myself to others in the industry. And that's kind of where I've been with it now.
It's funny that you say imposter syndrome, because once I release this, everyone's going to know how big of a fear of imposter syndrome that I have and how paralyzing it is. But the beauty of this is that every single person that I've talked to so far has mentioned imposter syndrome, and it really reflects on how I think we all feel in some sense, especially with how everything is amplified in today's world versus what it was like 30 years ago before you knew anything outside of your neighborhood. How do you approach imposter syndrome?
With time, I think I have to just like, it's a constant thing where it's not always there, but it's like, it'll come up occasionally in conversation with others, especially where people ask like, how do you have this together? And it's like, I absolutely don't. Or if I'm asking someone else, that they have a similar answer where they're like, I don't really know what I'm doing. And I'm afraid one day someone's going to call me out on my bullshit. I've kind of just like learned to be more confident in my choices. And that's helped me not feel like an imposter. But part of it comes from this like sense that like having grown up in New York in like lower middle class, like my parents immigrated here from Europe when they were pretty young and English wasn't my first language. I've always kind of been compensating in a way, not feeling like American enough or like not having been really socialized in many ways to like New York City in the sense that like I grew up in a transnational household. And I think in music, it's been a similar thing where I never really had a music education that was formal or lasting. And so the feeling is always, I have my foot dipped into a pond while also being on dry land. And moving forward, it's just been like, I've been overcompensating by trying to work harder to kind of feel more confident in my choices. And that's been a lot of like why I write so much, I think, other than like the obvious enjoyment and passion that I have for it. It's been a lot of like, you know, I'll keep doing this until I feel like I know what I'm doing.
I think that is a phenomenal thought. It's well thought out. And do you feel as though, to counter that, do you feel as though you're ever going to know that you know what you're doing? Or do you think that it's always going to be there?
I think it's like, it's going to be there and it has to be there in a sense. Like, when you think about what you're fueled by or like the many things you're fueled by, I think for me, it's like curiosity is number one. I'm like, I'm having a really good time figuring it out because I always want to be kind of like tinkering, but it's also this like necessity for me to be always fighting that uncertainty. But it like works in my favor sometimes. A lot of the time it doesn't, but sometimes it helps to like motivate me. So I think you're right that it'll always be there. Because once it's gone, it's like, all right, well, what do I do now? If I figured it out, what's the point? I might just get bored.
I'm really here to build people up, I promise. But at the same time, I think about it, and it's something that at no point do all of the accomplishments feed into a level of confidence that says, I know exactly what I'm doing at all moments in time. And it's always interesting to reflect on that, because the people who have answers for that know that they're constantly learning and that life is going to bring you things and roadblocks and obstacles that you may have thought in the past that you were prepared for, but it's an entirely different situation, and you have to approach it differently than you did, say, with circumstance A and circumstance B.
I think that's sage advice, because you like, no matter how much you're adding to your artillery over time, I think as you're faced with new challenges, you're constantly like reinventing that artillery, because you don't really have the same solution for every new question or new problem. But I'm kind of like excited by that. I think part of like my goal with music is to work on a project by project basis. A big idol of mine is PJ Harvey. And if you listen to her records over time, none of them sound like, her earlier work sounds kind of similar. You can see the thread, but she starts to move away from that classification. And I love that. And I think as an artist, I want to be versatile in that sense. I'm working on like an LP right now that's many things, but part of that sound is future pop and another part of it is like art rock. And so what I'm trying to do there is be asking those questions that maybe need new answers to like remind myself that I'm doing it for that alone, for that challenge, I think, and because I love it, but also because I don't want any two things to kind of pigeonhole me into a genre or a category. And so I think as I move forward, those questions will get more challenging and the gaps will be wider. So I definitely think that's a good perspective to take about learning and about like the challenge is just getting harder as you go, not easier.
Something that I've thought about a lot lately and something that you've touched on earlier in our conversation is deliberately finding happiness in the present. When we talk about goals, we generally talk from a big picture perspective. This is what I want life to be like. This is where I want to be. We're constantly zoomed out. And when you're zoomed out, though, you can miss some of the perfect that is happening right now. As an artist on the rise, how do you take the time to zoom in and find happiness in your journey?
Yeah, I agree that it's about kind of like honing in on the present moment in a lot of ways. And for me, it's like trying to stop and think about like what in the moment I am missing right now, missing in the sense of like, what do I want to be prioritizing? And if it's like going out to dinner with a friend or like seeing my mom or like calling someone, a lot of these things are related to like kind of connecting with others or like writing with a friend or like having band rehearsal. Like it's about doing the now so that later it doesn't feel like nostalgia is this like faraway thing. It's like a very like felt thing that you can kind of tap into again. I really appreciate being able to like spend time with people I care about and like connect with them without really thinking about music a lot, because I found that it can be overwhelming to let it seep into every part of my life. So as an artist, I think it's also about the not thinking about music all the time for me. That's been really helpful, or at least removing myself from that process and like appreciating art in other ways as like a perceiver rather than a creator.
And I think that's the perfect spot to stop. I hope that this brought a little bit of pause to music and thinking about music and maybe thinking about music in a different sense Nisa, thank you so much for taking time to chat with me.
Thank you. It's been a really eye-opening and wonderful conversation. And I appreciate having been a guest on this. I'm super excited about all of it.
I hope y'all enjoyed this episode of the Artist Development Podcast. To learn more about the project, visit artist.dev/podcast.